This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, what a stretch this has been, almost as good as a Donald Trump reality TV show, or might it be an episode of The Twilight Zone?
You're traveling through another dimension.
After this week's Indiana primary, Donald Trump is now the apparent GOP nominee. Ted Cruz and John Kasich have chucked it in. And even though Bernie Sanders eked out a narrow win over Hillary Clinton in the Hoosier state, she's still the likely Democratic nominee. So what's next? Joining us to help answer that question are political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Great. What a great week to be here.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Just, yeah. And you know, Ken, after last week, I thought nothing could top all the things we saw last week with the Kasich Cruz alliance, and then Carly Fiorina starting a brief stint as Cruz's running mate.
And just and when then, you... And then when John Kasich...
the basketball ring and everything else, and Bobby Knight.
And then when John Kasich picked Frank Lausche as his running mate, I thought that would change everything completely.
Right. Yeah.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Ken, get us started, though. We'd like to know what the trivia question is.
This week's trivia question is, who was the last presidential candidate who went into the convention with the most delegates but did not get the nomination?
Okay, and if you think you know the answer to that, the phone number to call, 513-419-7100. Phone calls only, please. No email answers for the trivia question. Again, 513-419-7100 if you think you know the answer to that. And the first correct answer is going to win a political junkie button. Ken, we had Cruz drop out right after the Indiana primary. Did you find it to be a surprise that he dropped out at that point?
I did. I mean, if you think of everything that he had been saying a week before that, or maybe 10 days before that, that Indiana was the one place where the Stop Trump efforts, the national Stop Trump campaign was gonna get some kind of a victory. And then, of course, as the polls show that Trump's still pulling away, I still thought that there's no reason for him to give up, because there's still obviously tremendous dissatisfaction in the party. But he looked at the numbers and said, there's no way I can catch up as far as delegates.
Yeah, and this was a guy, I mean, he had, 556 delegates already. But, you know, he could have gone on for a while and maybe tried to stop him somewhere along the line.
I think the beginning and the end really was New York on April 19th when Trump got 62% of the vote, and then the following week in the Northeast
he swept it,
and that was where the only place where maybe John Kasich had a chance, because there were so-called moderate states, moderate Republicans, and might reward a so-called moderate candidate, and neither Kasich nor Cruz had any kind of headway at all on the 26th, and then Indiana was the end.
What about Kasich, though? I kept hearing him say, I'm in this until somebody reaches 1,237 delegates. So I'm sitting here thinking, well, what changed your mind?
Well I think losing 49 states could do it.
Pretty much.
Very well.
Looking for one of these moderate states, and apparently the only one around is Ohio.
And they can only vote once. This
they can only
Chicago,
vote once, right.
Right.
I mean, and also the fact is, I mean, he didn't have any money left.
Yeah, it would cost him quite a bit to keep going.
The super PAC was going to start to dry up. I mean, you got to...
Look, the only reason he was still in the race is because he didn't drop out. I mean, Marco Rubio dropped out of the race 7 weeks ago and still had many more delegates than John Kasich. So all it was him just deciding that I'm not dropping out, because magic could happen in Cleveland. Well, I think the only magic that could happen in Cleveland is the Indians win the pennant, because other than that, there's going to be no magic in Cleveland.
don't pick on Indians fans now. Right. Come on.
Be nice.
And what about Carly Fiorina? I mean, that has to be the shortest stint as a running mate in history.
It was. I mean, a lot of people are comparing it to Tom Eagleton in 1972, and he was vice presidential nominee on the George McGovern ticket for 17 days. Carly Fiorina didn't even last that long at all. I come close to losing that.
And that was all about, really all about California, I think, the picking her, and, because she had won a primary.
True, but California. Of course, when she left California shortly after that election, right. She lived in Virginia and actually is kind of like said I have no California roots, so I don't know if that would have helped either.
Yeah, because she kind of badmouthed California after
right.
she left.
Right.
Well, what do you think becomes of her? Is this the last we've heard from her in this election cycle?
Well, yes, because I can't see her. I mean, given the enmity between Trump and Fiorina, the kind of things he said about her during the primary contest about her looks and her face and all that just awful stuff. I just kind of think for her to show her face and to come up and do any kind of work. Although, look, there's a lot of talk in the Republican Party that maybe the battle really is saving the House and Senate, and she may have a role in that department.
Yeah.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And Ken, can you give the trivia question again? We need to get some people lined up here to answer that.
The last person who walked into the who went into the national convention with the most delegates but failed to win the nomination.
Okay, so it's the last presidential candidate. It can be Democrat or Republican.
That's correct.
But the last one to go into the convention had the most delegates, did not win the nomination. Boy, that I don't know, Howard. Got to put my thinking cap on about that one. That's pretty good. Think you know the answer to that, though, please give us a call at 513-419-7100. If you get the correct answer, you could win a political junkie button from Ken Rudin. Ken, something else I wanted to ask you about, too, and get some clarification on, because this has been something that those of us in the media world have been going round and round and round about. Even though you've got Cruz and Kasich out, what is Trump? Is he the presumptive nominee or just the apparent nominee at this point?
Well, he is. I mean, I don't mean to be anti-Semitic, but I mean, he is the presumptive. Sorry about the joke. But I mean, he is the.
I'm glad you said it correctly, too.
Exactly. Well, we'll talk about it. He is the presumptive nominee because you are the nominee when you have 1,237 delegates. You are the president when you have 270 electoral votes. So everything is presumptive until that happens.
Yes.
And of course, that hasn't yet to happen. It may very well happen after California on June 7th. But right now, he's still about 100 and some odd delegates short.
Yeah, about 190, I believe.
Yeah, I have 182, but it's within that ballpark, right?
Yeah, okay.
So there has been so much, I guess, at this point, the idea that we've been thinking about a lot, the idea of a contested or a brokered GOP convention. I guess that there's just no way anything like that's going to happen now then.
You know something? Every 4 years, everybody has that fantasy, and I go along with it, but I always roll my eyes thinking, sure, it would be great. The last time, I mean, you guess you could say Reagan and Ford in 76. The last time it went beyond one ballot was 1948 with Dewey and Stassen and Taft and all those. But I basically we realized that it was just not going to happen. The votes weren't there, but it's as close as we've ever come, and it gave us some excitement. That's not to say that it won't be a contested convention in the fact that you'll see a lot of Republicans there moaning and groaning about the status of their party, but it doesn't seem to be any doubt about the identity about the nominee.
Yeah, well, what about the moaning and groaning has started already, obviously.
Started in Iowa.
Yeah, it started in Iowa. And but now, I mean, it's intensified now that everybody else is gone. And this is the only guy left standing.
I mean, you had like Kelly Ayotte, who's this Republican senator from New Hampshire, who's in a big tough race for a second term. She announced that I will support him, but I won't endorse him. Right. I mean, talk about
I don't know what that means,
right? Exactly.
I have no idea what that means.
The Republican Party is torn, and it was very interesting to hear Donald Trump on Tuesday night to say that, I think Ted Cruz is a great campaigner. I don't know what he thinks about me, but I see him with a great future. Well, and, of course, this just came hours after he accused his father of being complicit in the John F. Kennedy assassination. So it's just kind of remarkable
These guys. Yeah. Why in the world is that all about? I'm just sitting here scratching my head on that one.
There was a photograph, apparently, the National Enquirer or the Cincinnati Enquirer, one of those Enquirer newspapers. And no, it wasn't the Cincinnati Enquirer, because Howard would never
happen.
But that showed a picture of Rafael Cruz along with next to Lee Harvey Oswald, ostensibly. And I mean, it's just my goodness. But not only it's one thing for the Enquirer to go there and those photos to pop up, but for Donald Trump to give it credence it's just again what we've been seeing all year long with Trump and the semblance of reality.
Yeah, it is absolutely incredible that he would actually bring that up in the middle of a campaign or at the tail end of a campaign in Indiana. You just wonder what he might come up with in a general election campaign against a Hillary Clinton. You know, how outrageous is he going to be? Now, is he going to tone this down?
Well, one, he's not going to tone it down. Two, how much more outrageous can he be?
Right.
And three, I mean, this is either going to be the most entertaining, or it's probably going to be the most entertaining and most depressing general election in history, because you have two general election candidates who have more negatives than positives in their ratings.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton's last numbers, I saw, 56% unfavorable. Donald Trump, 65% unfavorable. Basically, you'll be voting again. It may be who you want least, you know, who's least objectionable to be the next president.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Also, if you'd like to take a stab at the trivia question, which, again, Ken, what was that question? I forgot already.
The last presidential candidate who went into the convention with the most delegates, leading in delegates, but did not come out as the nominee.
Okay. Again, if you know the answer to that, 513-419-7100, or even if you just think you know the answer to that, give us a call on that. Ken, you brought up an interesting point that being outrageous has worked for Trump so far. So it's very possible we could just continue to see more of the same thing as opposed to him just toning it down.
Oh, why would he tone it down? I mean, every time, you know, there was in the last few primaries when he was winning big, especially starting in New York, and people were amazed that they said, oh, he sounds presidential. Well, he sounds presidential because he didn't insult anybody. But the point is, what made Donald Trump who he is and what made him so popular among Republican voters is that he refuses to tone it down. He refuses to act the correct, quote, correct way, the right way. And so, speaking what's on his mind is, you know, exactly what so many of these voters like about him. And you could say, well, if you look at his numbers among women, if you look at his numbers about Latinos, if you look at his numbers about, I mean, certainly African Americans, you think that he goes into the November election as a decided underdog, and the last CNN poll had Hillary Clinton up 54-41, but you know, conventional wisdom gets thrown out the window when it's Donald Trump. And, of course, this is still May. And, you know, who knows? I mean, do I think he wins? No. Do I think he can win? Yes. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, we've been watching him win and win and getting closer and closer to 1,237. But it wasn't until after Tuesday night, not Tuesday night itself, but after Tuesday night, that I sat back and said, holy moly, this really happened.
Yeah. Did you really say holy moly?
Can you say that on the air?
Yeah. You really said that.
I really said holy moly, yeah.
Okay.
It's a very popular expression.
I say that a lot.
It's used by political pundits across the world.
Right.
We will continue our conversation with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. We'll also see if anybody's got the correct answer for the trivia question. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson join us this afternoon. And you can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken, we've got some folks lined up to try the trivia question.
Yeah.
So let's go first to Audrey, who's listening online in Rochester, New York. Hi, Audrey.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. What do you think the answer to that question is?
Robert Taft.
Okay. Robert Taft is a very good guess. He was narrowly behind Dwight D. Eisenhower at the 52 convention in Chicago, but Eisenhower had a slight lead and wound up winning the nomination, but that was a very good guess.
Okay, let's see if Mike in Monroe knows the answer. Hi, Mike.
Yes, I also had the same answer as Robert Taft. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Patrick in Miamisburg. Patrick, who do you think it was?
Wallace.
Well, George Wallace, I mean, I guess the time you must be thinking about is 1972.
No, I think he's, you're not thinking about George Wallace,
not,
are you, Patrick?
Are you talking about Henry or
Henry,
George?
Henry Wallace.
Henry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Henry Wallace, no. I mean, Henry Wallace, of course, ran for president in 1948 as the Progressive Party ticket. He broke with President Truman over foreign policy. Of course, Wallace was FDR's vice president, dumped for Truman in 44, and then in 48 he ran for president. But he was never had the lead to go into a national convention with the lead of delegates.
Okay, Malcolm in Mount Adams. Malcolm, what do you think the answer is?
Well, I can't think of anybody but Bob Taft. I'm the third vote. Maybe if he gets enough votes here,
we have a contested trivia question going on here.
Yeah. And you know, that was a contested convention of 52 because Eisenhower challenged a lot of those regular Republican delegates that were bound to Taft in the South, and that basically is what gave Eisenhower the nomination on the first ballot. Yep.
Okay, Alan in Centerville, what do you think the answer is, Alan?
Just a wild guess. I thought it was Dewey. Now, I know he got the nomination in 48, but did he run in 44 also?
He did run in 44, and he got the nomination in 44. He got it in 44 and 48 and lost to Roosevelt in 44 and Truman in 48, so he got the nomination both times.
Okay, so we've gone through the first round of callers and still don't have the right answer to this, so Ken,
does
the question.
Does Howard know, by the way? Does Howard think he knows?
I've got a couple of guesses. I'm not quite sure yet. I haven't narrowed it down yet.
Probably wrong. But
Howard's still thinking it's Robert Taft.
No, we had Robert Taft as the answer for like 2 weeks in a row.
We did.
Yeah, we did at that one point.
Because I got tired of Frank Lausche.
Yeah.
Give that question again, Ken.
The last presidential candidate who went into the convention leading with delegates but not getting the nomination.
Okay, if you think you know the answer, 513-419-7100 is the phone number to call. If you have the correct answer, first correct answer, you're going to win a political junkie button. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about Trump now being the presumptive, apparent, likely, whatever he is, nominee for the GOP party. But what's going to be his biggest challenge at this point, Ken?
Well, I mean, of course, uniting the party, that goes without saying. I mean, sometimes if you listen to him in the past week or so, he made it sound like uniting the party was not the most important thing for him, that if the leaders, and we saw just this week, just the other day, that both Bush 41 and Bush 43 say they're going to play no part in this election at all. They may sit it out, which is not surprising given the way that Trump handled and described Jeb Bush, and even called George W. Bush a liar regarding getting involved in the war in Iraq. So there's no love lost between the Trump family and the Bush family. But he should also have to name a running mate.
Right.
Now, I mean, sometimes we overemphasize the importance of a running mate, and I think we do, because ultimately you could talk about how great and exciting and inspirational that Geraldine Ferraro was Walter Mondale's choice for running mate in 1984, and yet Mondale Ferraro lost 49 states that year. So, you know, it's exciting. It can unite the convention. A lot of people loved when Bob Dole picked Jack Kemp in 1996, even though Dole and Kemp never liked each other, and it showed on the campaign trail. Ultimately, I think, I think a running mate is one thing, and two, how are you going to just deal with the Republican structure? You can't run against Hillary Clinton and against the Republican Party at the same time and hope to win.
Yeah, and the thing about the running mate is, right now, I mean, you know, you've got people running away from that. You know, if their names start getting floated out of there, they're saying, "Oh no, not me. I'm not interested in that."
Yeah, Sally Bradshaw, who's a top aide to Jeb Bush, she was asked by the New York Times whether she would consider it, and her email response was, "Ha ha 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 ha."
I mean, it's and what Trump has said about this so far is that I would like somebody who has some Washington experience or some experience with senators and congressmen and sort of thing, because I don't have any of that.
Which is funny because he's been deriding that experience all year long.
Yeah. Right.
Well, how much in the way of clues has he given us as to who he might pick as a vice president?
Well, he did. I think he did say that it would be either a governor or a member of Congress. I mean, if you're talking about governors, the first person you think of course, is Chris Christie, because he dropped out of the race and endorsed him. Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, who's not especially popular in Florida, but he comes from the very crucial, important electoral vote rich state of Florida. He's a possibility as well. Look, John Kasich is on the list. I mean, everybody says no, and Marco Rubio will say no, but if they see a future, if they see, let's just say the conventional wisdom, I can't believe I'm using conventional wisdom and Trump in the same sentence. But let's just say Trump does lose in 2016, and maybe somebody who gave the party his or her best shot in 2016 wants to try again in 2020, and that could be the running mate.
Well, that's a possibility, and that's the only circumstances under which that would happen. I mean, you know, it would be a big risk in terms of somebody like Kasich, because there's so much, you know, video and stuff out there of Kasich just, you know, talking about this guy as been a horrible human being.
Well, that's always true when you have somebody like Reagan and Bush or Kerry and Edwards, guys who ran against each other. But Trump, it's always been personal and nasty. Right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And I think of George McGovern even before Tom Eagleton dropped out of the race, but even after he dropped out of the race, he asked so many people in 1972 to be his running mate. Ted Kennedy, Ed Muskie, Hubert Humphrey, Rubin Askew, the governor of Florida, Abe Ribicoff, they all said no. So I just wonder if you're going to have a lot of people saying no to a ticket that could very well get decimated in November.
Yeah, I think you're going to have a whole lot of people saying no, and it might get down to the point where it's a former member of Congress.
That could be, well, that's Frank Lashey.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, let's try a couple more callers on the trivia question, Ken.
By the way, I'm an up the ante.
Are you?
In 2004, there's an NPR convention pin we had made from Boston and New York for the two conventions. It's a gorgeous lapel pin. Not that it'll make the answer any easier, but the person will get a political junkie button and a convention pin for the person who guesses this answer.
Okay. Let's see if Keith in Green Hills knows the answer. Keith, are you there? Hi. What do you think the answer is?
Yeah. I think the answer is George McGovern, and I think Hubert Humphrey was ahead going into the convention.
Okay.
Well, actually, that's a good question. But no, McGovern did have the lead over Humphrey going into the convention. But at the convention, the Humphrey forces tried to change the rules and make California, which was a winner-take-all state, a proportional state. So if that succeeded, then Humphrey would have taken the lead over McGovern. But the McGovern forces prevailed, and that was defeated. McGovern went into the convention in 72 as the leader and the nominee, almost lost those delegates had the Humphrey challenge been successful, but he did not, and he wound up winning it on the first ballot.
Okay.
That's a great guess. It's a great story, too.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see if JG happens to know the answer to this. Hi. What do you think it is?
Hi. Well, I was going to guess Hubert Humphrey, but I just found out that wasn't right.
So okay, stick with, you have to stay. Well,
now I'm going to go with Theodore Roosevelt.
Okay.
Well, Theodore Roosevelt, now, obviously, what we're talking about is 1912 challenge, I'm sorry, to President William Howard Taft. Roosevelt dropped out, you know, served, was elected in 1904, as you well remember, Howard. Yes. Didn't run again in 1908, and Taft was elected. But he broke with Taft, and he challenged Taft at the convention. But the thing is, because the delegates were all Taft people, even though Roosevelt may have been the candidate of the people, he did not have the delegates. So Taft had the delegates at the 1912 convention. Roosevelt wound up running as a third-party candidate, and then Woodrow Wilson was elected president because of that.
The Bull Moose Party.
That's right. That's Teddy Roosevelt, the progressives, right.
Okay, Eloise in College Hill. Hi, Eloise. Were you going to take a try at the trivia question?
Yes, how are you today?
Good, thank you.
Good.
Okay. Part of my question, I think it may be Romney's father, Mitt Romney's father. I don't know his first name.
George.
And then the comment that I have is that there's been so much hammering on Hillary regarding the woman card. She was the only female running other than Serena, but she's out of here. But you're a panel of all men, and as far as the last man standing, he's played the woman card. I'm talking about Mr. Whatever, Trump. He's played the man card, so what's the difference?
Well, let's take one thing at a time. First of all, George Romney was out of the race well before the convention. Remember, in September of 1967, yeah. George Romney said he was brainwashed by the generals in Vietnam, which really didn't do his cause much good, even though he was probably telling the truth.
And then Gene McCarthy came up with one of the great lines of all time.
About that brainwashed, you're very exactly.
Yeah, he thought it was just a light rinse would be all right. That was necessary.
So George Romney was out of the race well before the convention in Miami Beach in 1968. But as far as the man card, I mean, this is one of the things that either excites the Trump supporters or frightens the Trump supporters, in that he has no hesitation about Hillary Clinton is going to be, look, as far as I know, there have been a lot of men who've been elected president of the United States. I checked, and most of them have been men. Hillary Clinton obviously would be making history, which should be elected in November. So to say that she's running the woman's card is one thing, but for Donald Trump to, given all the things he said about women, about their looks, about this, about that, if anybody's playing the sexist card, it seems to me it's Donald Trump. Now, whether voters like that approach in November is one thing, but right now, the best thing that the Republicans have had in the last couple of elections, even though they've lost, is the votes of white women and married women. And right now, Hillary Clinton is winning that demographic by 20 points.
Yes. Donald Trump is just doing horribly with women across the board.
Let's talk with Peter in Mount Adams. Now, Peter, I understand you don't have a trivia guest, but you had something you wanted to share with us.
Yes. I don't know if you're familiar. You were talking about war. They started with Rod Serling. You saw Samuel Clemens quote Mark Twain's quote about the elections. It's always the lesser of two evils, but that person never shows up.
The lesser of two evils, but that person never shows up.
That's our election.
Peter, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much.
That's a great quote.
That is a great quote. Only Mark Twain. Let's see. Jim in Montgomery thinks he has the answer to the trivia question, so let's see if Jim is correct here. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Sure can.
Yes.
Okay, I think it was the 1952 Democratic Convention asked to keep off her.
You're going back to 1952 with that guess? You are correct.
Way to go, Jim.
Very good, very good.
I didn't offer an extra pin for that prize, did I? No. Jim is the correct answer. In 1952, not only was Estes Kefauver, who beat President Truman in the New Hampshire primary, then Truman dropped out of the race, not only did Kefauver go into the 52 convention with the most delegates, Adlai Stevenson wasn't even a candidate when the convention started, and he came out as the nominee. That's how crazy things were back in 1952. But Jim is correct. The answer is Estes Kefauver.
And Jim, congratulations. Stay on the line so that we can get the address on where we can send your prize to.
Very good,
prizes.
Very, very good. Prize is because Ken upped the ante.
All right.
Jim, thanks very much. And if you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number to call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken, you know, you're talking about unifying the party being the undoubtedly the biggest challenge that Trump is going to face at this point. How in the world is he going to pull that off? What does he need to do?
See, the thing is, he's, you know, if there were, some people had a fuzzy impression about him in the almost year he's been running for president, that's one thing. But there's nothing fuzzy. There's nothing half half done regarding Donald Trump. He goes in all the way. If he wants to insult somebody, he does it all the way. If he wants to be smooth and charming, he's all the way. There's nothing a little, you know, there's nothing partial about him. And so for him to unite the party against Hillary, look, obviously he's going to have to talk about how dangerous Hillary Clinton is and that, you know, she would be a continuation of Barack Obama, but even worse because she lies about this or that. I mean, whatever plans he has to take down Hillary Clinton, there's still a lot of Republicans who just can't get past everything he said about them and the party, right, and John McCain not being a hero and George Bush being a liar and Jeb Bush having no energy and little Marco Rubio and lying Ted Cruz. It just goes on and on and on. And maybe the voters don't care about it. Obviously, in the primaries, they didn't care about it because they kept voting for him, and they voted for him by larger and larger margins as the primaries went on. But and sometimes you think, well, a vice president running mate can unite the party. That's why Reagan, the conservative outsider, took Bush, the moderate insider, you know, that in 1980. Or that's why Kennedy picked Johnson. Kennedy, the liberal Northeasterner for the Johnson from the conservative wing from Texas. But I don't know.
Can't happen in this case.
I don't know who represents that other wing, that non-Trump wing that he could appeal to.
Right. And, you know, and there is nothing about what Donald Trump has said so far that is the Republican orthodoxy, the ideology, the platform that Republicans have always run on. It's just, you know, he makes it up as he goes along.
More political talk with Ken Rudin and Howard Wilkinson coming up. You can join us, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guest this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ken and Howard, what about the nomination of Trump meaning for the GOP chances of retaining control of the Senate?
I think it's big trouble. I mean, I think, and they know it's big trouble. I mean, all they have to do is lose five of them, and it's gone. And the down ticket implications of this, you know, that's why you got people like Rob Portman running all over the place trying to avoid, you know, saying, yes, I am going to support Donald Trump for president. He doesn't want to do that. Then there's like reports coming out from CNN saying that Portman's on some kind of Donald Trump shortlist for vice president, which must make him just physically ill to think about that, because the Democrats in Ohio are just jamming it.
Explains why Ohio Democratic David Pepper is so, yeah, hey, I'm fine with Trump. That pleases us on this side.
Oh, yeah, they love it, yeah.
Ken?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think it's sad that anybody – I mean, obviously, I understand the political implication that you want to have the weakest candidate run up with the opposition to help your party do better down the ticket, but down ticket races. But
well, it is something sad.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it is sad, yeah.
But it just saddens me that people will just say that I want the worst person who could represent the democracy. But look, he won. I mean, for all the times that Donald Trump talked about this being a rigged system, he won this fair and square. I mean, we could blame whomever we want. We could blame the compliant media. We could blame the lack of good candidates. I mean, whoever thought that Jeb Bush would be such a weak front runner? I mean, he turned out to be a disastrous candidate. But look, the voters were told all the things that Donald Trump said. They were told all the implications of his policies regarding a tariff on China, about a wall with Mexico. Now I understand that Trump said at the convention he's going to build a wall around Cleveland and Frank Jackson would pay for it, which I was shocked to read that. But look, the point is, here's a good example if you're looking at history. You think of George McGovern in 1972 when the Democrats lost 49 states, or Walter Mondale in 1984 when the Democrats lost 49 states. Both times, the Democrats had a net gain in the Senate. It sounds amazing, but they both picked up seats in the Senate that year, the Democrats, even though they had a disastrous top of the ticket. So sometimes you could avoid being connected with the front runner, with the nominee. Sometimes, like with Goldwater, you couldn't. And people like Bob Taft Jr., right? Bob Taft in 1964, lost to Stephen King.
Yeah.
A lot of Republicans couldn't break. Stephen Young, exactly. Stephen Young, I'm sorry. It does seem like Stephen King, doesn't it? It seems so surreal. But so obviously, I mean, you can survive with the top of the ticket being a weak candidate, but that's no guarantee with Donald Trump.
Yeah, I mean, but you got things like, Rob Portman is obviously going to be in Cleveland, but he says that I'm not going to spend any time or much time at the arena, at the venue. He says I'm going to kind of hold my own thing over at Cleveland, Cuyahoga Community College.
Right, he has to be there because he's a senator from Ohio, but there are a lot of Republicans in trouble. Like, you think of Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania or Ron Johnson in Wisconsin or there are just a bunch of them.
They don't have to be there.
Mark Kirk, yeah, a lot of them may, the dog may be sick or there's, the dog ate their homework and they have to stay home or something.
And the thing about Portman, what I'm saying is, he says, I am not going to spend much time in that hall. I'm going to have my own, little mini convention off-site, and we're going to do things, and we're going to have speakers, and we're going to have this and that, And it's like he's just avoiding Quicken Loans Arena, which is the venue for the convention.
Well, if Paul Ryan can somehow convince the American public that despite Donald Trump, that they need to keep a Republican Senate and a Republican House, because God knows what Hillary Clinton will do with the country otherwise, I just wonder what that does for Paul Ryan in 2020. Now, I can't believe we haven't finished in 2016 yet, but somehow there will be a dual effort here, not only to worry about the presidential race, but to protect the Republican gains in the House and the Senate, and that's going to be the number two story of the year.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation, and Joe in Loveland joins us now. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
I was listening to your comments about the outrageous things that Donald Trump has said, about Ted Cruz's father, and you guys kind of projected into the general election race and what crazy things he might say or do. I'm more worried that if Donald Trump becomes president and we get into a real national crisis or a military incident, what kind of wacky thing he's going to do then. And I'll listen to your comments on the radio.
Okay, Joe, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly, as Joe was talking, I was thinking the same exact thing, but the American people, if they know, they're talking about, look, bombing the S out of ISIS. Who talks like that? Who reacts that way? Nuclear weapons are not off the table. The last time you heard something like that was Goldwater in 64. And of course, the world was a much less complicated place in 1964 than it is right now. So yes, all those things about foreign policy, about trade, about Muslims, about troops on the ground, and
it's all stuff the Democrats can use to basically just tell the American people, hey, this is a scary prospect.
Yeah, but why didn't Republicans? Why couldn't Republicans do that now? Why couldn't the Republicans do that throughout all the primaries?
That's what I can't figure out.
No, Howard, weren't you saying that the Clinton campaign's already out with an ad, though, that takes aim at Trump over all the things the his GOP opponents were saying about him?
Well, no, I know I've said that they're going to, and they've got all the YouTube
video
in
the
world. I mean, they've got miles and miles of videotape.
Well, of course, you have Bernie Sanders saying that Hillary Clinton is bought and sold and paid for by Wall Street. I mean, you have all those things, too. But
right. But
somehow I have a feeling this – here's the problem. When you have two candidates who have such high negatives, it's like a referendum on the other person. It's not
It's not a pro vote. It's a anti-vote.
Here's the one difference, though. The one difference is that Hillary Clinton remains very popular within the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I mean, she still is the favorite for the nomination. Otherwise, all those 8 gazillion superdelegates wouldn't be for her because they feel she is the strongest candidate. That is not the same kind of feeling you have on the Republican side with Trump.
Yeah, and then you have the Bernie Sanders people who are, there are obviously many of them out there. and what they will do in this election. Will they stay home? Will they go out and vote for Hillary? I tend to think that they'll end up just saying, okay, fine, you know, we got to do everything we can to keep Donald Trump out of the White House, and they will end up voting for Hillary.
That's my guess, too. I mean, it reminds me of 1968 when all those Eugene McCarthy supporters didn't like the fact that Hubert Humphrey won the nomination without even running in a primary, and they didn't like the Johnson administration position on the Vietnam War, and they felt that Humphrey was too much of a sellout, and they a lot of them said that, well, maybe we'll sit it out. And maybe a lot of them did, but McCarthy did have a belated endorsement of McCarthy, of Humphrey, late in the campaign, and ultimately he almost won it.
What do you think of Bernie Sanders' persistence, Ken? I mean, I think he was out there predicting that he thinks he can pull off one of the greatest political upsets in American history. He can, you know, beat Hillary and Trump. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think Donald Trump has probably done the greatest political upset in history so far. It's hard to imagine the number, given looking at the numbers, how Bernie Sanders could possibly take the nomination away from Hillary Clinton, because he's going to have to convince these superdelegates that he's a stronger candidate, and very few of the party elite feel that way.
Not going to happen.
But here's the thing, that in 2008, around this time, Hillary Clinton barely beat Barack Obama in Indiana. It was 51-49, and yet everybody knew that Obama was going to win the nomination. And Obama and so many Democrats said, you've got to drop out of the race in the name of party unity. It's time to leave. And she said, I'll tell you when it's time to leave. It's when everybody has had their say. So she stayed in the race, even though, you know, and she criticized Obama plenty of times. And she stayed until mid-June. And so if Hillary Clinton was afforded that opportunity to stay in the race as long as she wanted, I think Bernie Sanders should be afforded the same opportunity, even though I think the numbers deficit with Sanders is much greater.
Bernie Sanders has used exactly those same words. Everybody should have their say in this, all the way up through California, period.
Peter from Oxford emailed. He wanted to know, isn't Sanders staying in the race just about ego, and isn't this damaging Clinton?
Well, I mean, clearly Hillary Clinton would rather spend all her time on Donald Trump, and for the most part, she is spending all her time on Donald Trump. But the fact is, when she loses, 52-48 in Indiana, and there may be some other losses coming up. There's West Virginia. There's, you know, there's Kentucky. There's other states that maybe Bernie Sanders can do well in. It's not good headlines for Hillary Clinton. Ultimately, though, I think that I don't see any problem with the party being united once all the primaries are said and done in June.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Roger. Hi, Roger.
Hi, nice to talk to you. I was wondering what your thoughts were on Sarah Palin as a vice presidential candidate with Trump.
I don't know. I just don't see that one flying.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, first of all, if all you have to do is look at Donald Trump's body language when he's standing next to Sarah Palin when she would go into her rants. I mean, some of them are just
smirking and, you know, like,
there was a case to be made, I think. I mean, in retrospect, there was a case to be made for Sarah Palin in 2012 that John McCain was not an exciting candidate. He was basically not exciting the base. Sarah Palin was new, and she gave the ticket a jolt in the arm. Absolutely, the convention came alive with Sarah Palin was named. But then, as she had to explain, you know, the world around her and the interviews with Katie Couric and Charlie in ABC News, Charles, whose name disappeared.
Anyway, it disappeared.
Was it Charlie Rose?
Quickly.
No. And not Charlie Osgood. It was
Charlie Rose, maybe?
No.
But anyway, but, I mean, it disappeared very quickly.
And now she's become, and now the things she says now are just beyond belief. It's just. Right. There is no Sarah Palin constituency that might have been there in 2012, I mean.
Even the Tea Party people, I mean, pretty much given up on her.
Let's talk with Alan in Lexington. Hi, Alan.
Hey there. I just want to ask the panel of experts what they think the Trump nomination says about the grassroots constituency of the GOP, and I'll listen offline.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
Yeah, I mean, that's the story. It's obviously, yeah. it's not the leadership, it's not the elected officials, it's not the, I mean, look what happened when the Republicans won Congress and it was led by John Boehner. Well, their rank and file could care less about John Boehner. He wasn't truly a guy of the people. He was still much too much of the establishment, too willing to work out deals with Obama, according to these people. And that's the same feeling about Donald Trump. He doesn't owe anything to anybody. He is not part of the failed either Bush or Clinton or Obama administration that got us involved in wars and more wars. And it's just a pox on both your parties. That's why I'm surprised that you think that Trump would be much better fitted as a third party or independent candidate because he spent so much time criticizing both parties. But this is the grassroots of the Republican Party. They've been led along by conservative sounding words that didn't ring true. And then for George W. Bush to be a conservative while he was running up billions of dollars in debt,
and they believe these people let them down.
Exactly.
I have to ask, is it really the GOP grassroots, or is it mostly new people that have been drawn into the process by Trump?
Well, it's some of both, I think.
Yeah, I think it's both, too. Yeah.
But these people, you know, actually do feel betrayed, not only by, you know, obviously Obama and the Democrats, but the Republican Party establishment. And they listen to a Donald Trump, and they believe that Donald Trump is representing them. And as Ken said, can't be bought. They can't. Nobody can buy them.
We got an email from Terry who says he took part in the GOP caucus in Kentucky, really liked doing that, and he was wondering what are the chances of staying with a caucus over a primary. Well, Howard, you got any thoughts on that in Kentucky?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm glad you enjoyed it, but it's done. They only did that for Rand Paul's benefit, and he had to pay for it. And I can guarantee you the Republican Party in Kentucky will never do that again.
Well, both parties' establishments are not crazy about caucuses because it brings out the more ideologically bound candidate. Just like with the left, the caucuses do favor Bernie Sanders, although the turnout is less, but it's more fervent supporters who are willing. And look, Hillary Clinton doesn't generate that kind of passion that Bernie Sanders did. Same on the Republican side. You think that the establishment, the last thing they like is caucuses. Remember in 2012, that was Ron Paul's claim to fame that he would do well in the caucuses. But, you know, there are some people say that the people who are truly committed are the ones who deserve to vote, and the people who are just passers-by, fellow travelers, it may not be the best thing for the party to have people who are not really have a vested interest in who wins.
John from Hamilton had a question about, I think you mentioned this earlier, it was either Ken or Howard talked about this earlier, about the percentages of Hillary beating Trump. What was the latest polling showing?
It was a CNN poll that came out yesterday that had her up 54 to 41. Right. That's a 13-point deficit. Again, look, you know, we all remember that Michael Dukakis had a 17-point lead over George H.W. Bush coming out of the convention in 88. Things can change. It's only May. I don't know what he could do to make a change, but he has a way of touching buttons, pressing buttons and pulling levers, and she has a way of just disappointing followers, even though she's experienced and smart and all that stuff. Sometimes she just does the wrong thing, says the wrong thing. So this race ain't over yet.
No, polls mean nothing at this point.
Ken, you know if the bookmakers have started giving odds on the Trump-Clinton matchup yet?
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they are.
It's May. It's May. And I'm just thinking Gerald Ford was like 20 points down in July of 76 and he lost by 2 points. So the point is, if the Democrats are like, as we quoted somebody earlier, if the Democrats are jumping up and down excited about Donald Trump being the Republican nominee, be careful what you wish for.
Ken, Howard, thanks for joining me today.
Sure.
Thanks. It was great.
Political junkie Ken Rudin, WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson.